Blog Talk Radio.
What can the Derek Chauvin's trial tell us about the state of Black economics? Stay tuned and we'll talk about that. Peace. Welcome to Dare to Win. Our roots began in Africa, where we enjoyed self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty. Welcome to Dare to Win, the Us Lifting Us weekly radio program that airs every Thursday evening from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Dare to Win is the place where we have sobering conversation about the economic plight of Black people and the imperative that we build the global economic machinery that will help us as we lost my place, that will help us and once again put us on the path of making history. We at Us Lifting Us have developed an exact methodology on how to build this machinery and pass it forward to our children and future generations. To join the conversation, please call 929-477-2789. Press the number one on your phone when you want to make a comment or ask a question. If you are on your computer, go to www.usliftingus.com, click on the Ulu Radio tab, then click on Listen Live. My name is Sister Q, and joining me for this evening's discussion is Brother Shibaka, who, like me, is a member of Ulu. Peace, Brother Shibaka. How are you?
Greetings, Sister Q. I am doing fine. First, let me make sure that you can hear me and the listeners can hear me so that I can be able to make out the conversation that we are engaged. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you very well. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I'd like to greet the listeners and appreciate the opportunity to talk on this subject and, as you said earlier, invite them to participate in the conversation.
Thank you. So our first question for you, Brother Shibaka, is what can the Derek Chauvin trial tell us about the state of Black economics?
Thank you so much for the question, and it can tell us a lot. There's a lot of symbolism that goes into the trial, but let me, before continuing my discussion with you on that, I'd like you to take a look at the scenario and the context in which this trial is presented. There is attempts to try to humanize Brother George Floyd, who died at the hands of Derek Chauvin. All right, so now it's interesting to humanize him. He's a black person. Chauvin is a white male, okay? And so there was once a policy in South Africa during the apartheid system. In fact, I remember it very vividly. I traveled to Zimbabwe. In order for me to go from Zimbabwe into South Africa, I had to get a visa, and all stamped on that visa I had to indicate that I was an honorary white. All right, because at that time, and in fact, some of the diplomats and some of the civil rights leaders that went there had to get honorary white status before they could enter South Africa, you know, during the apartheid era. And so, what, in my opinion, what the whole scenario around this trial is trying to show is that should we give George Floyd honorary white status? Now, George Floyd is dead. Should we give him honorary white status? Because in giving him honorary white status, then we have a white man who killed an honorary white. All right, so there's no need to go through this process of humanizing, attempting to humanize George Floyd. All right, so because he would have an honorary white status. And so the whole idea is to humanize him. And so the let me preface my remarks that I'm going to make, because I don't want the listening audience to in any way feel that I am in any way unappreciative of the traumatic experience that the family of George Floyd experienced, the sorrow that they went through, and the sorrow that the witnesses who observed this man dying went through as they played out, you know, the consequences of their action, which may or may not have led to the death of George Floyd. So I'm not belittling that at all. I'm just looking at things as I see it and as it is playing out in this, because remember now, the judicial system here in the United States is controlled by white supremacists, for lack of a better word, all right? Consequently, as a result of that, the people, so equal status, if we're talking about equal status, is equal status between whites among whites, and particularly class, too, that arose into it. And so George Floyd, all right, was not that status. And so right now, in order for the prosecution to try obtain a conviction, all right, such that if the conviction doesn't look too good, you know, all hell might break out, you know, in 4 weeks. The thing is to try to make George Floyd appear human, and in making George Floyd appear human, that this man was unjustly, all right, caused to die as a consequence of the action of Derek Chauvin. All right. This is important, and this is how I'm seeing it, and I'm trying to tell you what I believe. And the reason for this is how the trial is laid out. It's laid out first to try to gain sympathy. This is how the prosecution is laying out his case, is to gain sympathy as a consequence of this action that happened. Because remember now, what the attorneys on the opposition side or the defense will try to make out is that George Floyd was a thug coming from the African-American community. He was a thug, all right, a dope addict, all right, all right, coming from the African-American community. Now, how can they make that claim? Because we know that the disproportionate, you know, and they don't have no problem showing this, we know that the disproportionate number of black folks who are incarcerated come from what we call ghetto-like activities. And we know that ghettos is nothing but animals, thugs, okay? So that is dehumanizing. That is dehumanizing that community, All right, so if a person is from that community, you have to make them human. All right.
Exactly.
If you're trying to acquit him of charges. But see, that's not the most important thing in this case of George Floyd. George Floyd is a symbol of the community. I am very loosely using that word community.
Okay.
Very loosely. I would be more correct to say he's coming from the African or African-American neighborhoods in which is being controlled by other communities or surrounding communities outside of that neighborhood where people happen to dwell. Right?
No doubt.
The African community does not exist. In fact, it's difficult to find it exists in anywhere on the globe because of the socioeconomic control globally that Europeans or white supremacists have with that. And that lays the foundation for what we are hopefully we can discuss today. The community is, okay, community, and remember now, I'm using the word very loosely because it has no control. It doesn't manufacture anything, doesn't make or sell anything. It doesn't have any power, okay? It is patrolled by a force called the police outside of that geopolitical area. They live in that community, and they're mostly Europeans, even though the community itself is predominantly black and can afford to have some of its citizens join the police force. The majority of the people in most areas are white, so it's acting as if they're occupation force. Now, let's examine the term of an occupation force. An occupation force is designed, all right, to establish control for the area in which they are patrolling. Am I right? That's what an occupation force is. They have the guns, all right?
Mm-hmm.
They have the legal system on their side to patrol. All right, so when we look at these areas we call African or African-American communities, they're nothing more than administrative colonies of the external community. When I say administrative colonies, you know, like Indonesia, South America, well, if they elect.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, you didn't hear me?
No.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you very well now.
Right, I was just saying that they have no power. As a consequence of not having power, they become what we call colonized because they're just a territory of folks controlled from outside by those folks who don't look like them. Excuse me.
Right.
Even if we have a mayor, a mayor's role is administratively service to communities who gain from the control that they have over that area. Again, I'm using the term communities loosely. I'm not really talking about a community in the traditional sense. I'm talking about, for lack of using another term, all right, we're talking about a geographical area that is controlled from outside. The mayor offers no city council only manufactures those things that the outside community, generally white governor or county or whatever it is from outside, allow us to be able to manufacture. Because most of the communities, all right, using loosely, are run by various party systems, and we only have two parties. We have the Democratic Party and Republican Party. That's two parties. Okay, either one of those, okay, and those two parties control the nation here in the U.S. Give me another party that control. None of the parties that control. It's only the Democratic Party or the Republican Party. The Democratic Party seems like a liberal party, or is viewed in that image. The Republican Party is seen very conservative, ancient, Hitler-oriented. You know, that's how it's viewed. So therefore, George Floyd come from a colony, controlled by Europeans who surround that colony, was killed by a cop, okay, whose job was to patrol that area, okay, and as a consequence, people of African descent getting frustrated, demonstrated, burning town, interrupting the commerce of that area.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, the victim was somehow made to appear human such that they could arrest the cop who was responsible or appeared to have been responsible for his death. All right.
Right.
George Floyd. All right. Coming from the African-American community, colony with no power. All right. The person that responsible for his death or is on trial for that, all right, is one of the patrolling elements whose job is it to keep that community, again, my choice of words, subservient to the surrounding areas. All right. Now, we all heard of gentrification, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Gentrification, all right. So we know that gentrification is hot and high heavy. So now the colonial system is doing a slight transformation. And that means then that it is taking out the population that was there and replacing it with a population, all right, very similar to the people that control. So it's becoming So the African-American community now is becoming a settler colony. You know, all of this transformation is taking place inside the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it's now it's important to bring that concept in, because settler colony again indicates colony has no power. So this territory we call the African American community has no power, such that members of the community and replace the inhabitants, its original inhabitants. So it becomes an administrative colony that's transformed into a settler colony. And that is very, very similar to the kind of things we have witnessed in particularly South Africa, because South Africa is one of the last vestiges of settler colonialism, all right, because the Dutch became Boers, and the British, both those two groups from Europe, were minority and took over and occupied the most rich resources as well as captured the resources of which they used to feed the industry in Europe.
Right.
So that settler colony exists today because in South Africa today, you know, in South Africa today, right, European interest still dominates in spite of the, all right, that they have reached independence, you know, decades ago. So, and then when we look at the U.S., there's a similar kind of situation that is happening now. All right, as a consequence of that similar kind of situation, colonialism, I think that we fall very much in line to the things that Elder Neely Fuller Jr. talked about many decades ago in his great work, you know, dealing with the compensatory code for white supremacy. I spoke about that a little bit last week, but now I wanted to give a picture, you know, a concrete picture, an example sort of, that showed that what we've been talking about, the abstract things that Neely Fuller may have talked about, we can see right now. The things that we can see right now. And that. All right. Let me tell you, I don't want to keep talking. You may have some questions that you or the listening audience may want to pose.
I'm looking at the board, and I don't see any questions from the board. However, I have a question regarding the what you're calling the administrative colony and the settler colony. For clarification, the administrative colony would have a predominantly, let's say, African population, and it's being administered from outside. With so you might have an African so-called mayor, but he answers to the outsiders, the Europeans outside, tell him how to run the colony. Is that correct?
That is very correct. During the time of colonialism on the African continent and places in Asia as well, there was usually a white governor who administered the whole territory, the whole colony. But it was partials, and some of these partials was given to what they call paramount chiefs to run. So the chiefs had control over the ethnic groups that had to be settled or were settling in parts of the colony. All right, so you had a very small force from Europe, the governor, and then a couple soldiers and what have you. Mm-hmm. All right, in order to keep the natives in check, but most of the territory was run by chiefs, and some of those chiefs were Maine. All right, and was given power. And because of the socioeconomic structure that African societies have set up, the chiefs became, from the administration, the European administration, even though they had chiefs, so therefore the masses of folks, honored those because of the level of authority that they had being chiefs. All right, the administrators, the governor, was the primary. That was almost like he was God. Then he administratively assigned positions to these chiefs, which was primarily to administer over that. And so when you look at the terms of our mayors in the cities that we have in this country, in predominantly black areas, all right, their control, it may not look that easily. It may not be as transparent as it may appear. But remember now, the city depends on the state budget, okay? And they get an allotment, all right. Administratively, they may collect taxes, all right. Oh, really? They don't even collect taxes. They get a portion of the tax that is received, but it's the state, all right, that allocates budgetary conditions for each municipality within it, or county within it, or parish, if you happen to be on the Louisiana side, within it, okay? All right, and so therefore, I might be the mayor of Baltimore, or I might be the mayor of D.C. Well, I don't want to use D.C. because D.C. is a different kind of animal, or Detroit or what have you. Administratively, all right, budgets comes from, I receive money from the state as well as the federal budget. And, of course, the last time I checked, the president of the United States was white. The Congress of the United States predominantly are white. The members of the Supreme Court are white, and they have one honorary white. We call him Judge Thomas. Okay.
Yes, got you.
The honorary white.
All right. So, you mentioned.
Yes.
And I was even mentioning honorary whites. It seems that all of our so-called political leaders fall into that category of being honorary whites. I'm not for sure, but that's what it seemed like to me.
Well, structurally they are, because they're given a position. And remember now, this position is assigned to them by the administration of the land, and that that's not us. That's us.
Right.
That's not us. Okay.
Remember,
we talked about the two-party system, right? In order for me to run as mayor, or even as for me to run as a city council member representing my district, I need to get money from the particular party that currently controls the administration of the city or the state. They hold a contest. All right, and they use the media. A lot of the money that they get has to go for media because it may be extremely difficult for me to cover the territory, all right, that I am representing. So therefore, you use the media, okay? And you got all of the machinery that that party possess that controls that city, that controls that county, that controls that state. You have all the resources, all right, that can be used to prop you up as well as somebody else. Now, of course, the Europeans tend to plan in decades, so they know who they're going to select, but they have to give the pretense, you know, that, you know, you have a selection, all right? It wasn't coincidental that Barack Hussein Obama became president. It's not coincidental that Kamala Harris became vice president for this term of office. You know, they were selected, and there was a reason that they were selected, and not necessarily the rank and file of the Democratic Party needed to know or understand that reason.
Right.
So that's why I'm saying.
Okay. All right. So we're going to invite people to join the conversation if you want to. Please call 929-477-2789. Press number one on your keypad to make a comment or ask a question. If you're on your computer, you can go to www.uslistenus.com, click on the Uru Radio tab, and then click on Listen Live. Okay. I don't see where anybody is having their hand raised, Brother Shabaka. So we're going to take a quick music break right now, and we'll be back so you can tell us more about this conversation. I'm enjoying this myself. I hope other people are as well.
Supposed to be chains that bind him are hard to see unless you take this walk with me. Place where he lives, God, plenty of names, slums, ghetto, and black belt, they are one and the same, and I call. Any kind of job is hard to find. That means an increase in the welfare line. Crime rate is rising too. If you were hungry, what would you do? Rent is 2 months past due, and a building that's falling apart. Little boy needs a parachute, and this is only a part of some of the brothers got plenty of cash. Tricks on the corner, gonna see to that. Some like to smoke and some like to blow. Some are even strung out on a $50 Jones. Some are trying to ditch reality by getting so high, only to find out you can never touch the sky, cause your roots are in.
Welcome back. We're talking to Brother Shabaka, who is answering the question, what does the Derek Chavis McCloud tell us about the state of black economics. This is us lifting us Thursday Night UT radio program where we discuss taking control of the economic destiny of our people and how we're going to do that. Before the break, Brother Chewbacca was explaining to us what the Derek Chauvin trial tells us about the state of black economics. And he also explained the difference between administrative and settler colonies and how the two types of colonies follow Elder Neely Fuller Jr.'s code for white supremacy. Share with us, if you will, Brother Chewbacca, what are Elder Neely Fuller Jr.'s nine major areas of people activities and how that relates to our discussion tonight?
Oh, thank you very much for that question. I really wanted, that really is the heart of the question that you raised earlier. Neely Fuller was a great thinker, and you know, wasn't the kind of professional that we usually associate with thinking. But he was a man that studied. He had his experience in the military allowed him to see a lot, and so he wrote this compensatory code, of activities and behavior that we should, as individuals, perform, all right, in order to challenge the structure and hopefully destroy the structure of what we call white supremacy or racism today. Now, our job as nationalists, in my opinion, from my interpretation, is that we have to prove Neely Fuller wrong. And a lot of people, get confused when I say that. We have to prove him wrong because Neely Fuller said that there could not be any organized effort because of the strength that the white supremacists had globally. All right? Mm-hmm. And they had control over anything. You try to build something, they could easily manufacture a coup, particularly if you're a state government, or they can come in as the COINTELPRO did years ago, and it's still relevant today, all right, destroy and make your organization dysfunctional. All right, so he says you can't leave it. So what he has created was this book of codes. People read it, and therefore they would subscribe to a certain behavior, all right, and that if individuals – not coming together as groups, because once you come together as groups, the antenna of the situation of the Europeans would be up, and then it would then launch down on you. So we have to prove him wrong, but he gave us a very good model, a difficult model, in order to prove wrong. So he had constructed these nine, what he called nine areas of people activity that we had to participate in, and he gave us behaviors that we needed to do. The implication is that these nine areas of people activity were controlled by the white supremacists globally, and they represented the foundation by which people interact within their society, within their nation, or their community. And so the importance of this, when we talked about earlier, that when we looked at George Floyd, a member from the African-American community, which with the media was trying to make an honorary white. It was trying to make him an honorary white such that he would have the right to get justice because he was being tried in a white system. All right. So they had to make in that white system did not hand out justice to non-whites. It only handed out justice to whites. Consequently, they had to make him an honorary white. All right. Mm-hmm. Having made him an honorary white, showed the colonial, what I call the colonial and neocolonial nature of the structure that we find black folks in today. We're controlled from outside on no resources. We don't manufacture anything. Essentially, we are not self-sufficient or self-sustaining. Consequently, as a consequence of that, all right, is why the colonial structure that we currently live in is being replaced by a settler colonial structure in which the residents of the community that inhabit that can, through gentrification, can be replaced, and they have virtually no recourse. Fight, exactly. Jump up, go to court. They still, money dictates where they can go, where they go. All right. Now, these nine areas that people are engaged, nine major areas that people are engaged in any society that you go in. His first area was economics. His second area was education. His third area was entertainment, labor, law, politics, religion, sex, war, and counter-war. All right. So what Neely Fuller shows was in these nine areas, controlling these nine areas allowed the European or white supremacists to control any society globally. Now, I want to focus a little bit on economics because I said, what did the George Floyd or rather Derek Chauvin trial have to do with the shape of black economics, economics. So, and one of economics is one of the areas that Neely Fuller talked about. Well, in economics, as he defined it, and I have slightly modified it, but implied what he intended, is that economics not only means production, distribution, and consumption of goods and services that a society produces in order to feed, clothe, shelter itself, but it is also the sum total of all of what we think, speak, act, and use in order to produce these goods. So it's everything that we do in order to produce these goods. It's culturally based, whatever we do. So if the European controls the economics, they control our culture or cultural expression. All right?
Absolutely.
And as a consequence, as a consequence of this, all right, here's George Floyd killed or was allowed to die at the hands of Derek Chauvin, all right, who is a white man from outside of the community of which George Floyd lived, all right, which was colonized and probably in most respect was becoming a settler colony, being replaced, all right, and the exhibiting of power did not resist in the hands of those residents to resist the encroachment and the displacement, all right, of their original inhabitants by the outsiders. Consequently, because we had no economic strength, we had no economic power to be able to stop that. I mean, we could not buy the mayor because outside the Democratic Party or Republican Party bought the mayor. We could not buy the city council representative. We had no economic muscle to be able to do that because the Democratic Party representing the business elite and the Republican Party representing its side of the business elite had the money to buy the city council representative. We had nothing. And so George Floyd came from a community that had nothing, but they had to make him human such that at least some conviction would come about in 4 weeks, such that the African community would not tear down the city.
Right.
They can't afford to tear down the city. They have to have some manifestation of what they would perceive as justice, but they had to make him white first. They had to make him a human because he came from a community in which no one thought or is thought of to be human. So these nine areas of control is how the Europeans manages to control us, all right, and that we must be and look and act like them as honorary whites to get any kind of what appears to be suspect or respect, but we know in essence we don't get the respect. So we can have the highest degrees, we don't get respected, all right? We can make all kinds of discoveries. They steal our ideas. We don't get respected. So we have all of this and not be respected because the community that we come from is viewed not to be human.
Right. Okay.
Let me stop here to see if...
Yeah, I think we have a question. I'm trying to get back to the board. Let's see. Calling with the last four numbers, 4600.
You know,
state your name, please, where you're calling from.
Mr. P, calling from the Midwest.
Mr.
Yes, I was going to ask a question in the form of a comment. Now, I hear what the gentleman is saying, but that doesn't apply to all black people, all people that have black skin. Now, it replies to some, probably that comes from certain economic zones or areas, like that area there in Minnesota, which zip code is 55407 in that area, but it's not in all areas. Because you have to ask the question, how is it that some of these African immigrants, their community, they do so well in business, education, and household income? The Jamaicans and Jamaican kings, the Nigerians, they're just as black as Wesley Snipes. Granted, when you have conditions where you have so much dysfunction, breakdown in homes, which leads out into the goes to the school, and of course it leads out into the public. Those things have to be worked on, probably better than what they have. Remember in Minneapolis, the Somalis created the African Development Center, where they have their own Sharia bank. They bankrolled the Somali businesses. And, of course, some other things go on, too. But how did they do that? Listen for your answer.
Okay. Brother Shibaka, do you have an answer for Mr. Q?
Yeah, thank you, brother, for the question and a good observation, and I appreciate you bringing that up. Now, remember the areas that I attempted to identify. Hold on for one moment, please.
Okay. Okay, so...
Yeah, the areas, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Hello? Yeah,
yes,
the areas I identified, I said that not... The nine major areas of people activity, okay, the implication in that is that they are minor areas of people activity, all right? And the minor areas of people activity would indicate that the European or white supremacists do not control. Remember now, they control over even the areas you just named, the white Somali areas or the Africans that come from, and remember now, the Africans that come from Africa. The average African can't get over here. I mean, the plane fare to get here would be more than they make in a year. All right, so the African communities that you see coming from the Jamaicas and what have you are people that already have the money because they're in the upper strata to be able to come here, most of them, all right? But to get back to your question, the minor areas, which means then the European not 100% can control, and they don't extend to control. For instance, there are a couple development projects on the continent, and there's some development projects here in the South, in which huge amounts of money are being used because they address a certain need. But if the state apparatus sees no need to interfere, then they will allow those projects to continue. But remember now, the state apparatus see no need to intervene because they want those state because they don't necessarily want to invest monies in those projects based on the reaction that the inhabitants of those communities or neighborhoods will react by not getting involved. So they would allow certain projects to evolve, all right, without necessarily being directly, but they would ignore them, and they have reason to ignore them. If they didn't ignore them, the power of the state would come down on them because the state has eminent domain. Consequently, if they have eminent domain, they can remove the activity if they want.
Exactly.
So, yeah, the Somali comes in here. All right. The Nigerians come here. But the Nigerians come and the Somalis or whomever come here from a class of folks that far exceeds the wealth of the average African who can't come here because, number one, the plane ticket to come here is more than they make a year. And they're not saving up a year to come here. we're not necessarily given the entire – yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead, sister.
Go ahead. No, go ahead, Brother Shibaka. I'll say it when you finish.
Yeah, I was just wanted to add that the media does not necessarily give us a picture of the trials and tribulation that immigrants come here. I mean, let's talk about the southern border. They talk about the immigrants coming from Central America, and they make it all the way up to the border. But they tell you that the immigrants are brought here by coyotes. All right, the Coyotes is not charging $50 to go from Guatemala all the way through Mexico to come here.
Exactly.
You know, so those those people have some money. Okay, we don't. The media makes it look like these folks are poor, and they probably are in comparison to the U.S. But in comparison to the where they left, they had some money. They couldn't get here. They couldn't pay the Coyote. They couldn't pay the train. They couldn't. They couldn't eat food. They couldn't get shoes. I mean, that you we talk about 1,000 miles to walk. So I'm just saying, there's things that we see, all right, that we don't see. And so what I was trying to indicate is that the European has control. What he ignores, we can develop until we observe or get cracks. And sister, if you allow me a minute, I can tell you what I mean about cracks in the areas, the major areas that are recognized in order to hold power. The cracks, and I'll give you an example of the cracks. Right now, we are experiencing a so-called pandemic. Talks about the coronavirus. And I in no way, and I'm going to make this disclaimer, saying that the coronavirus, which is responsible for producing the disease COVID-19, does not exist. I'm not saying that. I believe that the powers that be is making it out more than what it is. The coronavirus is primarily, in my opinion, this is Shabaka, opinion, all right, is primarily designed, all right, to injure the non-productive aspect of the communities globally. That's your elderly people who have the highest fatality, okay? Well, they're no longer contributing on Social Security, they're no longer contributing. All right, in addition to that, the people who have pre-existing conditions. Well, they're usually on Medicaid, Medicare, something like that. And and so money has to be paid to them, all right, paid for them, all right. And right now the United States is heavily in debt, although it's supposed to be the richest company in country in the world. It's the richest country in the world that's heavily in debt, the most heavily in debt country probably in the world, all right. So therefore it needs to cut back on certain kind of budgets that deal with really, truly health care, to provide the revenue necessary, all right, to stimulate economic growth to compete with the Chinese.
Right.
All right.
Okay.
See, we see a small snapshot. We see a small snapshot. We do not see a large snapshot, all right, of the global context in which everything's happening. The Europeans control globally, not just your city. Not just your city council. They control globally. COVID-19, the pandemic, is global.
Exactly.
It's got global response in 2 months. You got to have an apparatus to be able to respond in 2 months.
Exactly.
That's global.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So let me stop.
Okay, and I wanted to go back.
Go ahead, please.
I wanted to go back to what you were saying. Mr. P brought up the subject of the Somalis and the Nigerians and other people from other parts of the world that come to the United States and are able to do some stuff. One of the things is many of those people, Brother Shabaka, are honorary whites, and they come here. And they're given, you know, some of them Social Security numbers. They're given some money to set them up. They're given apartments and various other things just for getting here. So
and they put them up north, and they put them up north in the Midwest so that they don't come in contact with Blacks are on the East Coast or South.
Yes. So that's something that we're not often aware of, you know, that we just think they it's like you said, the people coming from the border, from south of the border, that many of them, how do they have the money to get to there? And I understand that, you know, certain interests pay them to make their make their way here. But again, it's a lot that we're not privy to, that we don't know and we don't understand. So that's something to be taken into consideration as well. Brother Tibaka, we're going to take another quick music break, and then when we come back, we're going to let you talk about Ulu and how Ulu fits into all of this.
Peasant man to preach. Peasant man must seek permission from Pimp Caesar man to do God's will. Where is God? Peasant man loves peasant woman, but peasant man must pay Pimp Caesar man to wed peasant woman. Where is God? Even your own home is not your own. If your tax money is late, your land I will take, bitch. Better have my money. The laws of the land bear false witness against peasant man. Peasant man must pay Pimp Caesar man to be free. Pay me or pay the price of jail time, bitch.
Sorry about that, y'all. I didn't think that had that kind of language in there. We're back. Brother Tibaka, will you please help us to understand how cooperative economics, and specifically the Ulu model, can protect the black community from police overreach such as that which led to the murder of George Floyd?
Yeah, thank you so much for that. And that's very important because it gets to a heart. But let me recap very briefly the connection. Derek, all right, Chauvin, responsible for the death of George Floyd, who come from a community, all right, which is occupied by members of the police force like Derek, all right, is tried, and they're trying to humanize George Floyd so that they would get at least some kind of conviction that might appease the members of that community who've just had enough, all right, about why that community in the shape that it's in. It's in the shape that it's in because it represents and symbolizes and similar to the old colonial structure that we see happening in African Asian all over. And now that there's a transformation of that colonial structure from administrative colonialism to semi-colonial, where the occupants of that community are being replaced. All right. Everything is controlled outside. All of it is in the plans of those folks who don't look like us. All right. Now, Neely Fuller gave us 9 areas. All right. Major areas. I need to point that out, 9 major areas, because the implication means there are some minor areas in which there are people activity that for some reason the Europeans don't find important. Consequently, because they have the machinery, now they're only a minority in the world, but their machinery is global. I mean, they got satellites, all right, satellites a couple hundred miles up in the sky, that can see a dollar bill, on the ground. All right, so they can see what you're doing, all right? They got communications, the NSA, the National Security Agency, got communication apparatus that is probably taping this call. But they still expend a lot of resources in order to maintain this control. So consequently, as people are engaged in activities, that just certain activities is not worth our while. That's the oppressors' view.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let me give you a couple examples, and I'm going to show you how that ties to Ulu. In Benin, they have a project called the farming project. It's very self-sustaining, very well integrated, okay? And it's been there for a few years. It's done tremendous thing, and the people use the products. It's a tremendous amount of cooperation and education that the people engage in order to engage in this farming project. It's well integrated, and they conserve everything, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And they transform what they have. I mean, it's a miracle what they've been able to do in Benin. Well,
mm-hmm.
The national government hasn't saw a need to interfere because it needs that kind of project so that its people can engage in. You understand? So
right.
At the community level, this project is serving the community. The government doesn't care about it because it needs that in order to get the people. See, the government administration is scared of people. You know, they try to keep the people
mm-hmm.
ignorant. When the people
right.
become a little bit more conscious, they're scared because they're outnumbered. Naturally.
Exactly.
A brother had a housing project or did a housing project in which he was bringing to he was brought it to his aunt. I don't want to call his name. But he set up a septic tank, which was nothing but a tank that holds water. It captures the rainwater, okay,
mm-hmm.
and such that it can be used, you know, by the families, particularly during the time, during the dry season when it doesn't rain that much, all right? So this was in
right.
West Africa. So he set that up. All right, now, the Africans didn't think to set this up for themselves, okay, because
mm-hmm.
it was being administered by the colonial structure, and so they've been indoctrinated how to not necessarily benefit their people, but in benefit, you know, use the state apparatus in order to get rich. Now,
right.
there was one thing, there was one concern. There was one concern by some of the neighbors in the area say, well, I don't think the local government or the national government is going to let you do this project. It turns out that the local government, was appreciative of the project because they have had problems delivering water, all right, to the community. And the community
mm-hmm.
was raising hell. Why don't you get so... The mere fact of using these septic tanks that would capture water, you could have 1 or 2 days of water rain during a rainy season capturing, that would serve you the whole year. All right?
Exactly.
So they didn't
okay.
have to pay or worry about water, and that the local administration, the national administration, had no interference. They didn't want to bother them because, number one, they was doing them a favor. So the thing is leveraging. That's the key,
mm-hmm.
is leveraging. So what
mm-hmm.
does Ulu have? Ulu, you know, has a process by which we gather people at local level, family level, all right, and pool the resources. Now, we're not going to Bank of America, all right? We're not going to the state banks.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to the central banking system. No, we're pulling our own resources and identifying projects, all right, projects,
mm-hmm.
economic projects, all right, that one is needed by the community of which we are a part, all right, two can be profitable in the community that we have. In other words, it's needed, all right? It is
mm-hmm.
profitable, okay? It serves a purpose, all right, in being able to sustain itself, like the projects that I just named, like the water system
yeah.
project, you know, get water, you got it for a day, you don't have to depend on the state or the farming, it's a self-subsisting, everything exists in that farm, you take your goods, you sell it to the community around. It's got to be
mm-hmm.
Sustainable, so it's got to be needed, it's got to be profitable, it has to be sustainable, which is what Ulu has, and then most importantly, it must be strategic. Strategic.
Yeah.
All right, in other words,
okay.
you have to know what is going on in your community. What is going on in your society which will allow you to be able to do this? Ulu has set up an apparatus where we not only do we just accept anything that comes, it has to be needed, has to be profitable, such because we got to pay folks there. We can pay them, you know, and it has
mm-hmm.
to be sustained. It means it's going to go on. And then it has to be strategic, means whatever we do, you know, we're not expecting the IRS to come down on us. We're not expecting the Alabama government to come down on us, all right? It's
mm-hmm.
got to be strategic. So we go. That's the cracks, that they're not
okay.
paying attention to us, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And then we are contributing.
Right.
I'm sorry, Sally, you wanted to ask another question.
I wanted to ask you, because we are getting close to out of time here for the night. How does one become a member or owner in Ulu?
Oh, it's simple. All you have to do is go to the Ulu site. All right, the website is www.usliftingus.com. All right, and there's information there that will navigate you to a form which you can fill out, and you can then, you know, direct that form to that. But you must be a person of Black African descent. You can be a Boer, descendant of the Boers in South Africa, to be part of Ulu, because we're building an economy for people of African descent, the original people, all right? You already have your stuff in Europe. We don't need you there. So you have to be that. You have to want to be, and you have to buy into Ulu's mission, our vision. All right, our vision is to take us from what we are, continuously manipulated, all right, poor, and dehumanizing. All right, so you have to have do that. You know, there's information there. If you have questions on the information there, you can use the email and send a question, and you got a phone number there that you can call us too. All right, we'll take your application, we'll call you, we'll talk to you, see if you're right. And to do all this, you got an administrative fee of $50 to initiate that action. You become a member, all right? And you can contribute to whatever you want to contribute to build up the pot and be paramount in assisting and making the decisions on what kind of industry or what kind of business do we want to set up. Is there a need in this particular area? All right, can we make a profit because we're paying people? All right, and paying people, all right, can we sustain it? You know, we want it to be around more than just a day. And most importantly, all right, is it strategic? Is it something that we can do in sustaining for long periods of time without the backlash of the Europeans who find out might think of it as a threat?
Okay.
That's it, my sister. Thank you so much for giving me this opportunity.
Thank you, Brother Shabaka, and we want to thank everyone for joining us this evening. We'll be back next Thursday evening at 9 o'clock for another installment of Dare to Win.